Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 41 for September 19th, 2008. .NET Nuke. Floss Weekly is brought to you by Visa. With every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. This week, Randall's on his own interviewing somebody he talked to at OSCON about .NET Nuke, but I'll let him tell you the story there. Before we begin, though, a reminder, this show, as always, brought to you by Visa. When you go shopping, whether it's online or off, you want to make sure you take along your Visa card with you. Visa is all about security, making sure that every purchase you make is safe and secure. They use top-of-the-line business intelligence software to scan transactions, looking to prevent, detect, and resolve online fraud. That real-time fraud monitoring means one thing: zero liability for you. You're just not liable from unauthorized purchases. When you think Visa, I want you to think safe. I want you to think secure. That's peace of mind. Safe, secure, Visa. We thank them so much for their support of Floss Weekly. And now, here's Randall Schwartz to introduce our guest today.
Today I have a really interesting guest, Sean Walker of the .NET Nuke Project. He actually wrote me a few days ago before this taping and said, I'm a big fan of your show and I'd love to tell you about my project. Now, this is might be a bit controversial for some of you out there because .NET Nuke is a content management system that's easily extensible, but it all runs under the .NET framework, which is the Microsoft modern framework for building applications and building websites and things. So this isn't completely open source. What we're talking about today will, in fact, be an open source project, but it sits on top of the Microsoft platform. So hopefully it will not be so controversial that for some of you, you won't completely just turn me off right now, but there you go. So without further ado, let me bring Sean Walker on. So welcome to the show, Sean. How's it going?
Pretty good. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on Floss Weekly. I'm a big fan.
Oh, really? Really? So you've heard some of the shows before then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I listened to pretty much all of the shows that have been recorded previously, way back to when Chris DeBona was also involved.
That was something like 38 shows ago, I think, somewhere way back in there. That's great. Very cool. So you're on today to talk with me a little bit about .NET Nuke. Why don't you describe in 20 sentences or less what that is for our audience?
Okay. .NET Nuke is a open source web application framework and content management system, which is designed to be native for the Microsoft Windows platform. Today, it's the largest open source project on the Windows platform. With 600,000 registered users on our website and over 6 million downloads over the last 5 years.
Wow.
It's used by pretty much anybody you can think of, all the way from hobby website developers all the way up to Fortune 100 businesses. So
Now, normally when I think of web frameworks, I'm thinking of something where, say, some programmers and some designers would get together and build in some programming language, you know, like PHP or Python or Perl or something, and build some sort of technology behind it. Now, as I was reading through some of the basic descriptions of .NET Nuke, I saw that it can actually be used by non-programmers. Is that true?
Yeah, so we base our application or our framework on ASP.NET, which is the Microsoft framework. And then we add a lot of value-added libraries on top of it for common web development tasks that you would do. So basically, as a framework, right, you want to abstract a lot of the common plumbing details so that programmers don't have to focus on building the same thing every time. So we add a lot of value onto ASP.NET, and then developers build on top of our framework so that they can focus on their specific domain problems. But we also provide a fully functional content management system,
okay,
which works on top of our framework So basically, this proves that our APIs are, you know, robust and functional, but also provides a application that users can then use to build a website. So like a typical content management system.
Wow. So I could go in without writing any code, or at least just under basic understanding of the framework. I could go in and create a website then. What kinds of websites could be created that way?
Pretty much any website that you can imagine. .NET Nuke has the capabilities to manage memberships. So this could be a website that has, you know, a group of private members that need to authenticate themselves in order to get access to more premium content. Mm-hmm. But then again, that can be just users that are anonymous that are just browsing to your website and could view content anonymously as well.
Right. So I could set up, for example, a club site where I, you know, my friends and I all have like radio-controlled cars. I could set up a website with this that would sort of manage videos that we upload and pictures we upload and conversations and like mailing lists too, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it maintains a list of your membership, and it has newsletter capability in it, at least limited newsletter capability, so that you can send out newsletters to that membership. I mean, mm-hmm. you can use it for e-commerce. You can use it as a portal. You can use it for building vertical applications. I mean, that really, there's no limit to what you can do with the framework.
Wow. That's just really generic, then. That's really amazing. But obviously, there has to be some sort of, is there like a scripting language of its own then to handle more complex relationships, or is it all done by some sort of GUI to define, you know, first this, then that sort of steps?
Well, for extensibility, the native language that we are based on is ASP.NET, so the Microsoft ASP.NET framework.
Okay.
That means that you can build extensions in C# or Visual Basic or whatever other languages are supported by the Common Language Runtime. So there's a number of other variants of languages which aren't quite as popular, but they would still be fully functional within our framework.
And so because it's also ASP.NET, like the object model is the same for all those, and calls can interoperate back and forth no matter what language you're writing in?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we take advantage of all the goodness that's provided through ASP.NET, and then we provide extra functionality on top of that, and we provide some sort of conventions around how developers should build web applications, similar to, I guess, some of the conventions that perhaps exist in Ruby on Rails. So we basically define a pattern that developers can use to get them up and running very quickly, and so that they're very productive. Because if you dive into ASP.NET and you're unfamiliar with it, it contains a lot of great components, but it's hard to figure out how to combine those all together into an optimal working application. Whereas if you use our framework, you're already halfway there, and so it makes it much more intuitive for developers.
Wow, yeah, because I know that every once in a while I kind of delve over into the ASP.NET side. I'm trying to figure out what that all is, and you know, coming from a Unix background, it looks a little scary to me.
Yeah, I guess it could be scary for some. I mean, it is different in ways than other frameworks and other languages. Every language has its own specific attributes that you really have to get used to be productive. So really, we more cater to the Microsoft crowd. So, you know, the audience of web developers that are already somewhat familiar with Microsoft technology but are just looking for a productivity boost.
Mm-hmm. So if someone already had some existing components that they've been using in their own ASP.NET-based framework, they could integrate that with .NET Nuke as well then.
That's right.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Now, how did all this get started?
So as a lot of open source projects do, it was really a hobby venture by myself. Way back in 2000, Microsoft released the beta version of the new .NET framework. And I was a developer, a longtime Microsoft platform developer. And I wanted to come up to speed on, you know, the new framework so that I was, you know, productive in it and at least understood the differences between the legacy framework and the new framework. So I downloaded a sample application, which Microsoft had provided as part of the beta. The sample mm-hmm. was called the iBuySpy Portal. It was a very simple application, maybe 10,000 lines of code, which provided functionality which allowed you to embed sort of mini applications within a larger application, portal architecture concepts. So you could define a module, and then you could embed a module into a page dynamically.
Wow.
And I thought this was pretty interesting because I saw the the potential for it was much larger than what was represented in the sample application. So I started building out, you know, a richer set of features around that. And initially, I just had the idea that I was going to build a framework or an application that was finely tuned towards amateur sports, so club sites like you brought up earlier, because it seemed to be an interest that I had, and I feel much more comfortable building an application with a specific end goal in mind rather than just going in and just randomly tinkering.
Yeah. So was that something you had experience with already? Were you already doing web development in other areas?
Yeah. So I had a statistical sports application, which was mainly being used for ice hockey and lacrosse, a few sports. And I wanted to extend that to the web. Hmm. So push the information to the web and then have a club website. But after working on that for about a year in my spare time, I realized I didn't have the marketing or financial background to, you know, to turn that application into a commercial venture. And B, the work I had done on the ASP.NET side was rather generic in nature and really didn't apply to sports at all. It applied to more general purpose implementations, so it could be used by business or nonprofits or, you know, just about anybody. So at that point, I thought, well, I should probably share this with other developers. And part of the reason why I came to that conclusion was there was a discussion forum that was available on the www.asp.net site, mm-hmm. which was fairly interesting. And there was developers that were on there and sharing ideas around the same sample application that Microsoft released and that I had been working on. So I got involved in that and ultimately realized that there was a lot of developers working on that application, but nobody was really picking it up and carrying it forward, and certainly Microsoft wasn't intending to do that either. So I consolidated a lot of the enhancements and feature requests that were out there into one application offering, and I posted a link on that discussion forum saying that a new application was now available. I called it the iBuySpy Workshop, and immediately it got a lot of attention and a lot of traction. A lot of people downloaded it, and that sort of were the initial sort of catalyst for the .NET Nuke application.
Now, obviously, people are attracted to things that are already done for them. Was that most of the attraction, or was there a lot of like overlap with other people that said, I really just want to cooperate with something that already has some of it done, but I want to also contribute my piece to it?
Yeah, there was a lot of people that just really wanted something that was usable, but then there was a smaller group of developers that were, you know, actively developing their own version, but saw the benefit of joining, you know, forces into something that could be carried forward that could benefit everybody.
And was there any controversy in the initial design? I mean, did people complain about maybe some particular architecture choices that you made?
There was some complaints, and actually, so I mean, there was some really good feedback that mm-hmm. happened in those early stages in terms of ways that other people had implemented specific enhancements that which differed from the way that I had done it. And I consolidated a lot of that feedback into the first couple versions, and you know, provided a good foundation that people were satisfied with, so that they were willing to continue contributing in the longer term.
Cool. So you put this thing out there. At this point, it didn't have the name .NET Nuke yet. It had the iSpy, whatever it's
called. iBuySpy Workshop. Yeah. Okay. And so, interestingly, what happened then was Microsoft began to take notice that there was all of these forum posts which were related to this application which I had released. Uh-huh. And ultimately, they decided that they would create their own dedicated discussion forum on their site for it. Mm. And that quickly eclipsed, you know, all of the activity that was going on for the original sample application that they had released.
Wow.
And then within about 3 months, I actually got an invitation to come down to Redmond and meet with one of the product managers at the time. Mm-hmm. And he had an interesting proposition where he wanted me to focus on my efforts on developing the application and the community around it for the period of a year. So basically, I was sponsored for a year by Microsoft to continue working on this application and building out the open source community around it.
Wow. So Microsoft paid real money to you to work on this. That's great.
Yeah. And so it quickly, like, you know, as soon as you can apply full-time effort to something, it really grows quite rapidly. So I believe after that first year, it went from basically 5,000 users on the dedicated website for it to I think 100,000 users. Mm. So it grew very quickly, and the community grew around it. And within about, I think, 4 months, I established the initial core team of developers. And these were all people that were very active in the discussion forums and had sort of demonstrated that they had the expertise either with the technology or with, you know, other aspects of project management. So with that core group, that's how the application evolved to where it is today.
So now from that original, was it 100,000 lines for the original application? Or
yeah.
Okay. Do you have any sense of how many lines there are now?
Oh, I think that the application's probably around 300,000 lines of code now.
Wow. Now, you've written some good portion of that, but you have some other people on the core team now that are writing a lot of it?
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a core group of developers. We actually have the project structured very similar to other open source projects where we have various levels that people progress through as they gain more trust within the community, and then they get more responsibility, mm-hmm. the meritocracy model.
Sure.
So typically people would start off in a project team, which we have the project architected in a way which is very modular. So we have the core framework itself, but then we have a number of projects which are compatible modules which can be plugged into the core framework. And so generally, developers get involved with these projects initially. Eventually, they work their way up to be a project leader. Mm-hmm. And from there, they can move on to the actual core team and get commit access to the core framework. And then we also have a group, a very small group within the core team, which we call trustees, which have even more responsibility and basically have project management rights over different areas of the core framework.
Now, these are the people that have probably commit access to the actual official .NET Nuke sources then, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you manage the, I presume it's a distributed development team, how do you manage the distribution of that?
Well, mainly by using a variety of tools. And I mean, it wouldn't be possible without the internet, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we have a repository that we use. We actually don't use Subversion, which we're thinking of moving to Subversion, but we're using actually a proprietary repository tool at the moment because it was the best thing that was available about 5 years ago when we wanted to create a large international development team. Uh-huh. So that we have a bug tracker, which is obviously web-based and available to everybody. We use a lot of email. We use IM a ton to communicate with one another, mm-hmm. Skype. All of the standard internet communication protocols are all leveraged to their maximum to manage the project.
And you probably get a little bit done on your, was it biannual meetings that you get together in?
Yeah, so we have developer conferences. We are actually lucky enough to have a couple of them. So we initially, the first ones were held last year. And so we worked out an agreement with Dev Connections, which is a very reputable conference facilitator. And they have a conference every year in Las Vegas, which is geared towards Microsoft technology. And last year, we were able to secure a couple tracks that were dedicated to .NET Nuke. Mm-hmm. This was pretty interesting because it means that we're, you know, represented right alongside Microsoft Office, Microsoft Server, Windows Server, so folks like that. And so that was a real big step forward for our project in terms of, you know, validating that it's something that businesses should actually take a look at. Mm. And then we have also a conference that we've partnered with Software Development Network in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. They've had conferences, I think, for, you know, over 15 years, and so we have a couple dedicated tracks at their conference now as well, which is largely focused on Microsoft technology. So we're included in that group, and we get a lot of attendees there from around Europe. Even as far as we had South Africans that came last year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's probably a lot easier to have a mini conference inside a larger conference than to host your own as well.
Oh yeah, the logistical aspects of managing a conference are pretty intense, and so when you're a small project just getting started, I think it would be a bit much for you to take that on yourself.
I noticed you said down to Redmond earlier. Most of us don't say down to Redmond. Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm located in Vancouver, British
Ah,
Columbia.
Vancouver,
So,
BC, right. Up here
yeah.
in Portland, Oregon, we have to keep saying the other Vancouver because we have Vancouver, Washington right across the street, so right across
Right.
the river. So we have to say the other Vancouver. Yes,
Yep.
very cool. So that actually puts you fairly close to Redmond then for cooperation with things then.
Yeah, so it's only a couple hour drive, and I have very good actual interaction with especially the developer division from Microsoft, because of the fact that we run on top of ASP.NET means that the users of our application are, Microsoft Windows platform users. So we're a complementary application to their platform.
How receptive was Microsoft originally to the idea of a fairly large open source organization coming up, as you're saying, laying on top of ASP.NET? How receptive were they?
They were very receptive right from the early stages, and obviously, I mean, the fact that they sponsored me for the first year with that in mind meant that they weren't afraid of, ultimately what the large community that would grow out of that. I mean, I think that around the 2000 time frame, Microsoft as a organization was dealing with a lot of public relations issues, especially with the Department of Justice, rulings back in that time frame, and there was a lot of backlash against Microsoft for some of their business practices, and I think that they really wanted to build a large loyal community, especially catering to their developers, which were fairly loyal over the long term, and open source is one great way of doing that. And so I think that that's one of the aspects that they really appreciated about the .NET New community as it grew up around it. It was, these are passionate developers that are committed to their platform.
So even if the DOJ ruling didn't result in the actual transfer of anything, at least maybe they got their wrist slapped with the ruler enough that they're being a little more open to things like open source projects then.
Yeah, I think so. I
That's
think so.
good. That's good for all of us, I guess. That's really nice. Now I've got to ask this question. I'm sure people are going to yell at me if I don't ask this. Does this work with Mono?
At this point today, we've tried to get it to work with Mono, and it doesn't completely work. One of the issues that we've had with Mono in the past is they're typically, one release cycle behind Microsoft,
Sure.
which makes sense because, Microsoft comes out with a new version of their platform, and then Mono has to work hard to implement each of the, all the new functionality in that new version. And so typically we would, if we were going to support Mono, we couldn't take advantage of any of the more recent developments in the ASP.NET framework. We'd have to build for the previous generation. And that's been a bit of a challenge for us because sometimes we want to take advantage of the new functionality that Microsoft has provided. And ultimately, there's not a huge demand in our community for people to run the application on Mono or Linux.
Well, that might
So
be self-selecting too. It might be since it doesn't work, nobody's going to come forward and say they want
that is true.
it.
Yeah.
Here's, it doesn't work with this. Well, that's probably why we're not getting many people doing that.
Yeah.
What are some of the, you say there's projects, there's extensions to this. What are some of the extensions that have been created for .NET Nuke?
Oh, it really runs the gamut of anything you could think of. But the most popular ones which are available are things like discussion forum modules, storefront modules, blog modules, chat, form builders. Some of the more common things that you would do on the web. There's modules that exist for just about any of those picture galleries. I mean, these are all common things that people want to have in their websites today. And they're not things that we provide as part of our core framework. So there's quite a few modules that are available which provide, from limited to more advanced functionality in those specific areas. And the interesting thing about our community, which differs a bit from some of the other open source web frameworks or content management systems, is that there was a commercial ecosystem almost from day one. I mean, as soon as somebody realized that you could build an extension for .NET Nuke and that it had some value for customers, they made it available for sale.
So most of
And
this isn't open source extensions, and most of these are commercial extensions.
Yeah, that's right. So in the Microsoft world, people are used to paying for software. So the ecosystem, the business ecosystem around .NET Nuke grew up almost immediately as soon as the open source application became available. And it's, been growing over time. And I would say today, it's, a very healthy business ecosystem in terms of, the people that are building extensions and the systems integrators who are then, implementing the application for customers.
How was now getting back to the business model then? How are you making money? What's the setup for you?
Yeah, so for actually I was managing the project for the first few years through my personal consulting company. And at one point it just became obvious to me that this was not the right vehicle for moving forward because as an individual I could not scale and the organization or the business, vehicle was not designed for that either. So in 2006, we actually created a new corporation, .NET New Corporation, and I brought aboard three other co-founders. And the idea there was we needed to provide some more services to the open source community to allow it to grow more rapidly, but at the same time, come up with business models which would, sustain the project through the long term. And I mean, over time, we've done a lot of research on other open source projects, especially some of the more commercial focused open source projects, in terms of how successful they have been at employing different business models. And so initially, we thought that, a pure service-based business model would be sufficient. And by we actually offer professional support for the platform today, and it's relatively successful. Certainly, there's a lot of businesses out there that wouldn't choose an open source application unless they feel comfortable with the vendor that is behind it. And so there definitely needs to be a dominant vendor that's providing, support for the platform.
So that would be .NET Nuke now, or do you not have enough reputation for that?
Oh no, yeah. So .NET New Corporation is definitely the person who stands behind the .NET New project. But over time, we've also seen that other open source commercial companies who offer an open source version as well as a commercial version have done fairly well as well, because that's another model that customers are used to paying for. They're used to paying for products, and so we're trying to work out the sort of optimal balance between offering a commercial version and offering support, and doing that in a way which doesn't compete with any of the existing stakeholders that already exist in the ecosystem. It's definitely a challenge. It's certainly much easier just to release an open source project and keep it free forever. However, it doesn't pay the bills. So at some point in time, if the project gets successful enough, you just have to deal with some of these challenges which come up.
Yes, definitely. It's one of the trickier things, and actually that's why I like to ask all the people we have on Floss Weekly. I need to find out what it is that they're actually doing that puts bread on the table for them, because it's got to be a way. There has to be a way. I mean, my personal history is, I've basically been talking about Perl for the last 15 years, but I've been, teaching and writing and consulting on it, and that's been my bread and butter. So, real familiar with that. Speaking of that, speaking of history, I guess, what did you do before all this? Were you said you did some web development before that, but did you start out doing other things in open source, or did you, were you like just a contractor for hire or an employee, building that kind of stuff? And what's your history?
Yeah, so I guess I began my software career in 1990, and at that time I was building business applications for public sector organizations. So I was building like accounting systems, payroll systems, warehousing systems, and that was all on the VAX VMS platform.
Oh, I remember that. Oh. Watch me as I
Yeah.
cringe for a second. Okay. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Square bracketed directory name. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Versions.
As much as
Versions.
I cringe about some of
Yeah.
the parts of it which were difficult to deal with, that was a rock solid platform.
It was.
So I think back to that and I think of sort of the simplicity around the development model and the deployment model and within organizations. And I mean there was some good stuff there as well, right? So
Yes. Some.
but then it's at one point I needed to upgrade my skill set, because that was not a platform which was going anywhere anytime soon. And I moved over and got involved with Microsoft technology at that point, building rich mm-hmm. client server applications, still mostly building business systems for larger enterprise customers. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was around 2000 that I began my own consulting company, providing consulting services for within the Microsoft technology realm for, you know, businesses around the Vancouver area. Mm-hmm. But then it was through my own sort of self-education around coming up to speed on the next generation Microsoft platform, ASP.NET, that the sort of humble beginnings of .NET Nuke began. And I mean, it's served me well over the last, I guess, 8 years now.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Where do you see this going? I mean, obviously you can keep managing sort of the core of it, but what's your vision for this?
I would like if .NET Nuke was the de facto web framework that Microsoft developers would use anytime they were considering building out a web application. So
who are your competitors then? Who do you have to stomp on to make this work?
Well, there's obviously a few other commercial web frameworks which exist for the Microsoft world today. And then there's also, I mean, Microsoft itself, which continues to provide some advancements in their own platform. So
how do you compare to those?
Well,
I mean, our audience might not be familiar with it. You say, obviously, there are other commercial things, but our audience might not be familiar with them. So,
right. Yeah. So there, another fairly popular framework on the Microsoft platform is called MereMortals.net by Oakleaf. But typically, the only ones which have any real traction, I guess, would be .NET Nuke, and then people developing just standard ASP.NET applications as well.
And given the licensing of .NET Nuke, at least some of the open source parts of it, it would seem weird for somebody to just start from scratch with ASP.NET and not take advantage of the leverage you're already providing, right?
Yeah, because we're licensed under the BSD license. So basically, that provides the maximum freedom in terms of allowing other people to use the application in any way they desire.
And I was going to ask you about that, the BSD license. Now, is this, were you considering many different open source licenses, or was it instantly going to be the BSD license? And if so, why are the other ones ruled out? What process did you use to rule the others out?
Yeah, so in the early stages, we basically distilled down the licenses that we were considering using down to the BSD and the GPL. Mm-hmm. And after doing, you know, a lot of research around those licenses, I believed that there would be more opportunity for the project by making it more open and more available. And that was, you know, more offered under the BSD. Back in 2001, I guess, or 2001, 2002, mm-hmm. there was a lot of confusion around the GPL, specifically in the Microsoft community. Hmm. I mean, Microsoft had kind of poisoned that license in some ways by making public comments about the GPL. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think it would have been suicide for us to choose the GPL at that point. Wow. We probably wouldn't have got very much adoption from, especially from businesses, because they would have, you know, listened to what Microsoft had said about that particular license and ruled us out at that point. So the BSD was definitely a better choice at that stage. Over time, I've learned that there, you know, there definitely is some benefits to the GPL as well. And obviously there is, because there wouldn't be, you know, probably 80% of the projects that exist, open source projects today, are licensed under the GPL. So clearly there is a benefit to the GPL as well. But the BSD has served us well over the life of the project.
So you said the BSD license has more freedom than the GPL. I'm sure there's some card-carrying Free Software Foundation members that are up in arms right now. Can you describe what you mean when you say more freedom?
Well, it's more in the specific cases where somebody wants to build a derivative application. So if you're building a derivative mm-hmm. application of .NET Nuke, mm-hmm. You can take the BSD licensed code, you can add some proprietary bits to it, and you can call it something else, and you're free to redistribute it and contribute really nothing back to the original .NET Nuke project. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of freedom there. Whereas with the GPL, if you're going to go down that path, really you're obligated to provide some of your enhancements that you've added back to the original open source project.
Yeah, it could. That's exactly what I say about it too, but I just wanted to make sure somebody else said it besides me. Thanks.
Yeah, well, and you're obligated to provide things back.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't know how often that actually occurs.
Yes.
Because I don't think that the GPL has been tested very often in a court of law either. So.
Yeah. And I know the BSD license has been definitely tested in court. lots of cases about that. What license was the original stuff from Microsoft in, and did that affect any of your decisions?
Yeah, so the original iBuySpy portal was released under a very liberal end-user license agreement. It wasn't an open-source license,
mm-hmm.
Because it definitely wasn't a license that was approved by the OSI, but it was a license which allowed very liberal usage and distribution, and so there really was no problem in me releasing a new version of that application under an open source license.
Cool. And Microsoft signed off on that or whatever it took, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that was part of the initial year of sponsorship.
So if I want to go see a site that's built in .NET Nuke, I presume that your site itself is in using .NET Nuke components, right?
That's right. So .NETNuke.com, so .NETNUKE.com is a site that's built using .NET Nuke, and I mean, it's basically the hub of our community. Another interesting site, which is very high profile, is the Australian Rules Football League site in Australia. So the afl.com.au, it's a site that gets an incredible amount of traffic, especially during the peak season.
Okay.
I believe it's like Sundays, you know, during peak season, 40% of the consumers in Australia visit that site.
I tried going there once, but I got a scar, so it's a dangerous Australian rules football. I actually got to see it in person last time I went to Australia, and it was just an amazing thing. These guys are insane.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible sport.
Now I get an email from the Australian saying, we're not insane. This is the way it's supposed to be played.
And then the National Rugby League as well in Australia. So nrl.com.au is using .NET Nuke as well.
All the dangerous sports down there. That's great.
Yeah.
And what about hosting? Are there sites that provide hosting that sort of support this? Or is there really anything required besides the normal ASP.NET support?
Yeah, I mean, it only requires standard ASP.NET, Windows Server, and it require a SQL Server database or a SQL Server Express database. And one thing that happened about 3 years ago was Microsoft wanted to compete a little bit more heavily in the shared hosting market because Linux was doing so well at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they included .NET Nuke as part of a hosting program that they launched to try and encourage more hosts to offer Windows hosting alternatives. And so there's probably about 50 hosters today which offer .NET Nuke as a standard solution for their customers.
Now, the advantage there is that it would have a lot of the libraries already installed or whatever.
Yeah, it just makes it much easier for a customer to get up and running with .NET Nuke. You don't necessarily have to be a developer in order to, you know, take advantage of a hosting account. So if you want .NET Nuke and you want to just build a website using it, then the hosting option is an attractive option because you don't really need to know anything about the infrastructure underneath it at all.
Wow, so I could buy a package from a company, a hosting company, that is supporting .NET Nuke and completely from my web browser set up a site then.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Wow, that'd be pretty cool. And again, pretty broad range of things. I mean, everything that .NET Nuke supports sort of at the core would be accessible that way, or just some interesting subset?
No, it would be the entire set of features, and you would have the capability to purchase extensions
mm-hmm.
From other vendors and install those into your application. We have a runtime extensibility model, which is very simple for even consumers to use, where basically if you buy a module from a vendor, you simply log into your web application, you upload a single zip file, mm-hmm. and it unpacks the files into the necessary location, runs the necessary database scripts to provision it, and it's available immediately. So you don't need server access in order to, you know, increase the functionality of your web application.
Wow. So I can kind of add to itself from the inside then.
That's right.
Very cool. If someone wants to contribute to .NET Nuke, they pretty much sort of need to start at the project level, right?
Yeah. And typically the best way to start is to just get involved in the discussion forums, you know, where there's a ton of activity, which happens every day, because people come and they ask questions about how to do this or that, or, you know, how to deal with specific issues that they're encountering, and people can establish themselves in it as an authority through that discussion forum, where they'll get noticed by, you know, some of the project teams, and perhaps get solicited to participate on those teams.
Cool. And so besides the mailing lists and forums for support, are there trainings, are there workshops, are there books available?
Yeah, so there's, I think that there's probably 8 to 10 full-length books available on .NET Nuke today. Mm-hmm. I've actually been lucky enough to participate as a co-author on a number of them, so mm-hmm. I believe that I've participated on 4 or 5 books to date. Rocks Press, so which is a division of Wiley Publishing, mm-hmm. has been a really big supporter of .NET Nuke from the early stages. They came out with the very first .NET Nuke book, full-length book, and actually it was very successful. I believe it sold over 10,000 copies.
Wow.
In its lifetime, which is pretty good for a sort of a niche technical book.
As a writer, I'm impressed. I've had books sell more than that, but I've also had a few that have sold less. So yes.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, and there's definitely a bunch of titles currently which are being created, mm-hmm. for our next generation platform, .NET Nuke 5.0, which will be out in the next couple months. So there'll be a whole new set of books which cater to that particular platform. And then in terms of training you asked about, mm-hmm. .NET Nuke Corporation isn't in the business of providing training, but we have a training partner, which is Engage Software, mm-hmm. and they've been doing a decent training business around the platform, both classroom training where people can come to their location and take a training course, or they'll come on site and do on site training as well. And they're going to be offering webinars as well, I believe, in the future.
And I presume there's some online tutorial resources as well.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of community sites that provide tutorials, both textual tutorials as well as video tutorials on how to do different things with the platform. Some of them are free and some of them are paid for. So there's some sites that offer subscriptions for training videos, mm-hmm. and then there's more free community-oriented sites which provide articles on how to do various things. So we actually do have a very decent network of community sites which provide support for the platform, which is really appreciated as well.
Yeah, having come from the Perl community, where it seems almost like a sin when you have to charge for something, it's sort of refreshing to hear people have worked out models that actually work.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is what's going to make the platform commercially viable going forward. Mm-hmm. As if people have, you know, their bread and butter revenue tied to it, then, I mean, they want to see it succeed as much as we do. So.
Yep. I mean, I keep trying to convince people that open source doesn't mean you have to take the starving artist mentality.
Right.
There's really the opportunity, if you understand how to do it, to actually make a living off it. Obviously, I have, so I've got some of the sense of that. So, I'm just trying to see if there's any remaining questions here. Is there anything that you've thought of while we were chatting that I haven't addressed yet?
I don't think so. One of the things which is interesting that I've noticed over time is that Microsoft open source projects don't get a lot of recognition from the non-Microsoft platform projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of the sites that are out there, like Slashdot and Fresh Meat, they cater specifically to Linux open source based projects. So mm-hmm. we can't even get visibility into some of those channels because we run on the Microsoft platform. And I find that a little bit difficult to swallow, because as long as your project's under an open source license, I can't see why there's such a big problem accepting it as a valid open source community participant.
Well, I've got to say, there are people in the past that haven't wanted to be on this show simply because I use Skype to call people. So
really?
Because Skype's not open. I mean, so it depends on where you are on that open source spectrum. The card carrying FSF members, as I referred to earlier, are I can see why they wouldn't even want to talk about this project, because it sits on a commercial platform, and that's sits on a closed source platform. Excuse me, I need to distinguish those. But you know, it's the way it is. I'm a practical guy. I tend to take a little of this, a little of that. You know, one from column A, one from column B, as long as it gets my job done.
So. And that is the argument that they put forward, is that because .NET Nuke doesn't run on a fully open source stack of components, yep, that it really shouldn't be considered open source. But the reality is that a lot of customers and users aren't really concerned about the fact that all the layers in the stack aren't open source, because the lower, more infrastructure layers have sort of been commoditized over time. And how many customers really want to add tweaks to the Linux kernel or Apache as part of running an application? So I don't know if that argument really holds a lot of weight for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to me. I mean, I want to get my job done at the end of the day, and I'm sitting here, you know, I'm talking to you on my my OS X laptop, and, you know, it's Intel-based, but it's OS X, and that never really upsets me, because as long as I can, you know, download an open source project and compile it into the Unix-like interface that it has, I'm done. You know, it's open source enough for me to get my job done and still have my layering on top of that. So I really see where you're coming from on that. And it's sad that people are so polarized along this issue. I blame and congratulate at the same time the Free Software Foundation for that. Because, you know, they've come along saying everything must be open source or free software, actually, using their definition. And in fact, there's room for practicality. There's room for a compromise in the middle. So I appreciate what you've done with .NET Nuke then. It sounds, I just wanted to have get a sense of the size of the community. I know you've mentioned download numbers, but would you have any sense right now of like how many websites on the planet are .NET Nuke related, or number of people actively contributing to projects or something? Is there some measure that gives us a sense of who's active in this thing?
Yeah, I would say there's probably 300,000 or 400,000 websites that are publicly active on the internet today running .NET Nuke as their base platform.
Wow. Wow. So this really has had a pervasive impact then for some of the sites that we probably visit every day.
Yeah, and we estimate that there's about 12,000 new domains going live each month running .NET Nuke.
Well, that is significant. That is really incredible. Congratulations to you for this project and getting it off the ground and doing what you had to do that. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you for being with me here on Floss Weekly. And any last words?
No, just I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. I'm a big fan.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Well, that was Sean Walker of the .NET Nuke project. You can see more about his information again, as he said, at .NETNuke.com. Kind of makes me wonder if he's actually registered NETNuke.com, so he can go www.NETNuke.com. But we'll see. I think it's a pretty interesting project. It's got a lot of stuff going on for it. Building a lot of websites. I had no idea. And some very high traffic websites too. So, you know, one of those quiet things happening behind the scenes that just makes everything work for everybody. This is great. Well, if you have an idea for a future Floss Weekly show that Leo and I can interview, I would love to hear from you. You can write me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, at Stonehenge, StoneHenge.com. That's just the same way that Sean wrote me just a few days ago to say, hey, I've got this interesting project. Feel free to, you know, promote your own project. That would be great. And we'll see if we can schedule you on a future Floss Weekly coming up. And also, just a quick plug for my other podcast. Not quite so many downloads, but I'm hoping someday. I do the cruises with Neil Bauman called Insight Cruises. If you go to podcast.insightcruises.com, you'll see more about that as well. We have some very interesting topics going on in that channel. Basically, the recordings of our world-class speakers that go on the cruises. And every once in a while, a bit of information about an upcoming cruise. So check those out, and until then, happy flossing!